This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Upstart, MyBookie, and Policy Genius. More on that later. Let's get into the do.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pass Studios. I am Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social medias. I want to say thank you to you guys. Seriously, this community continues to grow. I absolutely love my job and this show and the stories that people are bringing here. The fact that you can laugh at your trauma, be that strong about it, be that open about it, be that vulnerable about it, I fucking love it. Thank you for the messages, all that stuff. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. And if you're wanting more of it, man, hit up the Patreon. That community is growing as well. It's called The Honeydew with Y'all, where I'm highlighting the lowlights with y'all. It's $5 a month. If you sign up for a year, you're getting over a month of free episodes. All right. If you or someone you know has that story that needs to be heard, submit it to honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. Hopefully, we'll get to do a story with you. All right. Now, I want to say, talk to you about something real quick that I'm very proud of. You know, I record here at the Santa Monica Music Center and working on with a nonprofit here with Lana called Outreach Through the Arts, ADA, which is at-risk youth, like myself and the guest you're about to see were when we were kids. If we had a program like this, we'd have been so much further ahead in life, I will tell you that. But we're teaching these kids how to podcast, how to live switch, how to work with cameras, graphics, editing, the whole thing. Ash is over there helping them. They're watching him. They're learning, and they're super stoked about it. We're going to start a podcast with these kids and give back. So very excited about it. Keep an eye out for that. I'll be feeding you some of that stuff. You'll probably meet these kids. I'm going to have them on the Patreon. They're really good kids, 18 years old with stories already that are insane. So that's the biz. We're highlighting the lowlights over here. These are the stories behind the storytellers, and there's only one storyteller like this guy. He is back, y'all. The saga continues. Ladies and gentlemen, Joey Diaz. All right. I'm just so stoked to talk to you, dude. I miss you so much.
There were those programs when I was growing up. We just robbed them. You know what I'm saying? Dog, I robbed the science department. I had all the triple beam scales. And they knew it was us, so they came to us, and they're like, just give us like eight back. You keep that. We robbed all the
give
frogs.
Give us eight of them. They negotiated with you.
We took all the frogs. You know the frogs?
Yeah, for dissecting.
We took like 300 frogs. For a month, they couldn't dissect the frog.
I forgot who I was talking to for a second.
Then we robbed the athletic department one night.
What did you take from them?
Everything that was in that thing, from sneakers to jackets to hoodies, they came to my house the next day and they're like, listen.
This high school or what?
Yeah, the high school.
They came to your house?
And they're like, we know, just come on, give us a break. The kids can't run track this week without their sneakers. Just bring it back.
They're forfeit.
And we'll make believe like we don't know nothing happened. You know, it's like nothing ever happened. I swear to God.
I believe you. We don't need to swear to me. Jackets, I believe you.
Oh, jackets, God. Trophies.
Trophies. Just taking trophies. You can't even sell those.
Didn't matter. We're taking them.
Please, before we get into the continuing story here of your life, plug, promote everything you want to.
I'm at Vinny's the whole month of March down the shore. Vinny's Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club in Point Pleasant, Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock, $20, working out with Uncle Joey, BYOB, BYOG, too, because it's legal to bring grass now.
Yeah, that's right. It is, huh? So you could actually, they'll let you smoke at the venue, not inside, but outside?
No. You can smoke outside now. It's legal in New Jersey
okay,
now.
Okay, good. Your Patreon.
Doing well. I love it. Really got me out of a funk. If it wasn't for Patreon, I still would have been in the funk. Talking to those people every day and answering messages. You know, I had it July, August, September, and it really gave me a lot of confidence, like to start at that level, just shooting little videos. And I'd give them two free podcasts a week, just 20-minute podcasts, just quick shit, you know?
Yeah, I just do an hour. I do an hour once a week, and they're great, man. They're the diehards. So what? How much is yours a month, Joey?
3, 5, and 10.
3, 5, and 10, and it's
no more merchandise, none of that shit. Shit gets lost. People don't get the t-shirts. It's just a pain in the ass. It's just content. And like you and like Jimmy, you know, I'm doing the same with my Patreon money. I'm helping out a few comics, a couple retired cops. I use cops to give me rides to the gigs, and they're retired, you know, shit like that. I donated to the restaurant thing.
Yeah.
For Portney. Now I'll donate to Jimmy's. That's what my Patreon is for. Help out a few people. I pay Mike, you know.
Yeah.
It's
you're doing it twice a week and 20-minute episodes twice a week?
Yeah.
That's great.
It's more music-based, you know, shit like that.
Well, make sure you subscribe to that. And, what you're referring to, so John Minidakis at Jimmy's Famous Seafood in Baltimore took a page out of Portnoy's book and did what Dave did in Baltimore, raise money for local restaurants and stuff, because they shut the city down, but they didn't shut the county down. That bullshit. So he raised over $500,000, and today I get to make a call to a bar I used to go to back in the day called Ale Mary's to let them know that they're about to receive some money to help save their business. So I'm stoked on doing that. I love everybody out there helping. You know, who are you gonna rely on? It. You ain't relying on the government. You're relying on the people, man. The people are the ones.
I told them in the beginning, I go, listen, guys, I know they're gonna promise you unemployment. Who knows how many people are gonna call? Go get a job for now. Go stock shelves until this clears up. And sure enough, people in Jersey are hurting from unemployment. You know, I had to help a few of my buddies out last month and this month because, you know, it's just a nightmare what's going on.
My buddy James took a job at Costco. You know, he's like, look, I'm out of work. I need to get a job. And took a job as, he's a dad down there. And I said, hey, good for you, man. Good for you.
You know, you can't eat pride.
That's right, brother. Pride don't fill your belly.
No.
All right, so let's get back into it here. We're talking January 1993 is where we left off. I believe you're leaving Colorado.
I'm leaving Colorado. I'm beat up emotionally. I'm beat up mentally. You know, physically I wasn't beat up, but just emotionally and mentally, for the first time in 10 years, I was done again. Like I had just gone through a big chunk of life, you know. A lot had happened, and I was ready to move on. And
Joey, sorry, just as a reset, how old are you in January of 93?
Whatever. Take away 58 from 93. I don't know. I don't have my calculator with me. Yeah.
What year were you born?
I'm 30 years old.
All right, 30. You're still young. You're in your 20s.
29. Right. I got nothing going on. I got comedy under my belt. You know, I'm not featuring yet.
How long had you been doing stand-up?
At that point, a year and a half.
Okay, you about me. I didn't start. I dabbled at 20, but I didn't do it again until I was 27 when I really got into it.
I was doing it every week. Okay. I was a host. I was friends with Stanhope already and that type of shit. And then I got fired from the broker where I worked as a house MC. And I just really went into the dumps. The girl I was dating moved to New York, and I was making money selling Valium. That's how I made a living, selling and eating Valium. When you're a Valium salesman, depression is definitely going to be in your life.
I was going to say.
So for me,
Valium salesman, you just said.
I'm a Valium salesman.
Sound like you sold it with a fucking suit and tie on.
I was selling Valium from like September of 92 to January 93. That's how I made a living.
And what kind of living? What kind of living are we talking? Is that the only thing you have to do to get by? That's it? Sell Valium?
$500-$600 a week.
Okay.
You know, that was one of my many hustles, selling Valium. I was working for a sports betting service. I delivered Chinese food. I delivered Coke while I delivered Chinese food as a cover.
Wait, you so know, how? All right. If I want to buy Coke from you when I order Chinese food, do I ask for a special something? Like, is there a duck sauce on the side? Or
I got the job then. I told people, if you need Coke, call me. So they would call the Chinese restaurant. And then one day the Chinese people came up to me. They're like, we don't know what go on. You get more calls than we get more calls. So I had to tell the people, listen, when you call for a fucking Coke, you better order an egg roll or soup or something. Yeah. So I have an excuse to go to your house.
Wait, they were just calling asking for you to come over without making any orders? That's stupid.
And the Chinese people are like, what the fuck? You get more calls than us. So I told people, you got to order a pint of fried rice.
And
I'll put it in the bottom. I'll put it in a baggie in the bottom. So even if I get arrested, I could blame it on a Chinese guy at the restaurant. Oh, I had it down to a fucking science. Right? So I'm doing everything I can.
Damn, yeah.
If you wanted to buy Coke or Valiums from me and I was working, I would actually make you come down to the venue, the broker. I would just tell you, come to the broker. And you go, why am I meeting you at the broker? And I go, because I got to meet my Colombian friend there. You want your Coke pure, right? And you go, yeah. I go, yeah. So meet me at the broker. I'll give it to you at the broker. No, you were going to pay for a ticket to come to the comedy show. So
nice.
I was making you pay
okay.
for it.
All right. So,
so you
got to buy.
To the broker to meet me.
You got to watch I'm you on do the, stand up.
I'm on the stage going, hey, come on, pay. Just pay the $5 at the door. And the people would pay, and then I'd take care of them afterwards. And they go, what about the $10 I paid at the door? And I'd make up some story, give them an extra pill. I think I was paying like a quarter a pill, and I was selling them for like $3.
Damn.
So it was like high profit. I was getting rid of $300-$400 a week. Ooh. You know, so I found myself just broken. I was broken about how my divorce was going. I was broken about the only thing that was good in my life was comedy. That was the only good thing in my life.
But you're taking those volumes, so you're bringing yourself down medically too. So
I'm partying. At
yeah.
Night.
But is Valium fun to party on? Doesn't that just one? Isn't that
elephant
trank?
I'm snorting coke. I'm drinking beers.
Okay.
I'm getting
all
my
right.
dick sucked. Yeah, I'm not just sitting there with a pill watching TV like some fucking asshole. You know, I'm doing coke and then I'm eating the Valium to throw off the fucking coke so I get a hard on. So I had a little Asian girlfriend at the time. We were having a little affair. And we weren't going nowhere. It just was a dead life. So I fucking called a friend of mine. His wife answered. And I told her what was going on with my life. And she sent me a plane ticket to come home. I went. I got like 1,000 Valiums because I knew I could get rid of them here. And I fucking just came here like Super Bowl Sunday, 93. And I sold some Valiums and I got a job selling cars. And I started doing comedy around the city at the New York Comedy Club and stuff like that.
So you left Colorado to go to, did you go to New York or back to Jersey?
I went to Jersey.
And then you would do comedy at night?
In New York City, I was selling cars, you know, and then finally she had a baby where I was staying. She was pregnant and they had a baby. So I had to find a place to stay. So my buddy had to go to rehab. So his mother let me stay at his house while he was in rehab. With the deal that when he got out of rehab, I was going to take care of him. I was in no position to take care of anybody out of rehab. I had my own rehab issues, but I was a functioning, you know what I'm saying? Like I was working in the city. I stayed in New York from January of 93 to November of 93. I probably got on stage 12 times in those months. Not as many as I should, you know. It was a hard time for me. I was watching a lot of comedy. You know, like when you're at that level, that nobody will talk to you at a comedy club. You just go there. They know you're a comic, kind of. You did an open mic there and you ate a bag of shit.
Yeah.
They don't really talk to you and you don't talk to them. Like, I was at that level. So I was going into like Lucian's Club and stuff like that and watch. And then at night, I would go to an open mic that started at 11. It went from 11 to 4.
Damn, 4 in the morning?
And sign up was at 11. And when you got there, you were already number 94.
Holy shit, yeah.
It was like 6-minute spots. It was called Yay Old Triple In. So I would sign up and I would drive a limo. And I would go to Kennedy Airport, pick up the last Asian, because Japanese people usually fly in late, about 1. I'd pick them up. I'd drive them, drop them off, and then I'd go to Yay Old Triple In. And my spot would be ready. It'd be like 2:30 in the morning. I'd be like half hour away from doing my spot. I remember being on stage and seeing a chick giving a guy a hand job in the audience. Like, that's the type of place it was. Like, you know, so.
I've always wanted to do stand up like at one of those old Blues Brothers places where they put the cage fence up and people could throw shit. I've always wanted to do that.
This was the place.
Without the cage, it sounds like. Let me ask you this question real quick. You're going through what you're going through. You're in a dark place. What is that 6 minutes doing for you? When you're getting on stage and at least getting to fucking tell these jokes, does that 6 minutes helping you more than any drug or, you know, how are you feeling with that?
Yeah.
Because you want to keep going back, right?
I was really at an all-time low human being. The only thing that was keeping me alive was my day job. You know, I liked my day job. I got a job working for a dear friend of mine who owned a sandwich place, and he wanted to start a delivery business. So I would go to all the businesses in the area, take the phone number, and I would fax them the menu for the day. And I tripled his delivery business. So I would work from 10:30 to 1, 2 o'clock, and make about $800 a week there. And then I'd either drive a limo in the afternoon, 4 o'clock to 12, and that was it. That was my thing. I was also going into the city for drugs for people. People didn't like going into New York City to buy coke. So I charge you a fee. So grams of coke were $35. I charge you $45, you know.
So you pick up and deliver? Grams.
Yeah, I'd pick up. I'd walk over the bridge in those days.
Really?
I used to walk over the George. Yeah, because they
George
they
Washington
you
Bridge? You could walk over that back then? Can you still now? Yeah. Can you walk that bridge?
Yeah.
Oh, you can.
I don't know if I'm in the shape to do it now. It's going to be a long walk.
Yeah, it's a long walk.
But back in 93, I used to do it back and forth in, you know, an hour and a half. Cop, stop, eat some Cuban food on the other side. So my roommate had gotten out of rehab. And he's my best friend. We're still best friends. We talk every day.
Okay.
His daughter works for me on Patreon.
Oh, nice. All right.
He went to rehab. So it was me, him, and his grandmother living in a 2-bedroom apartment in Cliffside Park, New Jersey. So when he got out of the rehab, he was hooked on heroin. So it was like a joint family. He has a great family. So his grandmother, his mother, his sister, and his aunt were like his support system and me. You know, but it was me and his grandmother who lived there with him. Right. So every night, you know, he didn't have a job. He was on disability. They got him a job in the city, like moving rocks in the daytime. He got paid like with food stamps, like once a week, and he'd go buy heroin with it. Right?
I love that heroin dealers will take food stamps.
So
there's an asshole heroin dealer taking Bitcoin and shit today. You know that guy's out there.
So George would sit there at night. We'd be watching TV, and he couldn't wait for his grandmother to go to bed. That was our whole goal. You know, like if I walked in at 12 and grandma was awake, George's face was red because he was dying to shoot, but he couldn't. because his grandmother was away. So I come in, I go, "Grandma, what are you doing up? Letterman's on. Go watch David Letterman." And he look at me like, "Thank God." And then she go in her room, close the door, and she had a cat. She had a cat on her room, on her bed, and she would just sit there at night snacking, like eating popcorn. And I would wait for George to go in the bathroom, and I'd time it perfectly. You know, I let him burn it, let him put the fucking thing on, and then I'd shoot spitballs at him to her.
Wait.
Through the door.
You're hitting them with...
She would sit there with the cat, and all of a sudden, these spitballs would be hitting the bed, and she'd be looking up at the ceiling because she thought the stuff was coming off the ceiling. And she'd go, "What the hell?" And she'd get up, and she'd go looking for her grandson. Georgie, what? And then I'd be in the room, laying there, like, making believe I was asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
And she'd come in, and she'd go, "Georgie." And I go, "Grandma, it's me." And she goes, "Where's George?" I go, "I don't know." And she knew he was shooting heroin in the bathroom. She would storm to the bathroom and bang on the door.
And George, he's all tied up. Off.
He's over there looking like Marilyn Manson, all tied up and shit. So the other one I used to do to him, you know, their family's an art collector. They're art collectors. And they had this big gong in the hallway. And again, there were some nights that grandma would go to bed. I would lay down, but George would go to bed first. He would play it off like, "You know what, grandma, I'm tired." He would go to bed sweating bullets because he knew if he went to bed, grandma would go to bed because she wouldn't have to worry about him. So again, I'd let him go to bed, grandma go to bed, and then I'd go to bed. And sure enough, George would get up, give him enough time to cook the heroin and tie up his arm. And then I'd walk out into the hallway with a hammer
and I'd hit the gong. I know those gongs. I've hit one of those before. That fucking thing is loud. It made my daughter cry. They're loud as shit, man.
I hit the gong, and again, she'd come out. "What, Georgie? I don't know." And she'd run into the bathroom. "Georgie, open up." And she'd bang on the door, the whole fucking thing. I'll never forget. It was like I was my life. Like I was physically and mentally down, but my house was fucking hilarious. He used to sit on the couch and flick his ashes behind the couch. And I remember one day grandma caught him and she moved the couch and it was just a mountain of ashes. Like, do you know how many ashes it has to be for it to be a mound?
Yeah.
Like, there was ashes on top of cigarettes. He was just throwing cigarettes back there and ashes. It was just a fucking, it was a horror show. I had to be in the city. Some days I had a free ride into New York because my friend's father was a bus driver. So I had to learn his schedule.
He would let you get on.
For free, yeah.
That's nice.
His son is dead now, but he was alive then. And it was just my education into comedy. It was those 9 months in New York. Like, it was a lot of fun. I did a couple crimes.
What kind of crime?
I can't talk about.
All right. Okay. All right.
like ripping off drug dealers.
Yeah.
I had a friend that was still into it, and
Let me ask you this. All the crimes that you've committed in your life, from kidnapping to dealing to whatever, what was the one that was most nerve-wracking? Would it be the kidnapping, or would it be knocking off a dealer? Because I feel like knocking off a dealer is dangerous shit.
Knocking off a dealer, and that's what I was doing. My buddy had gotten DEA badges. He was getting info. He was getting his info from a DEA agent, and it was like stealing.
And so you guys would just go make those hits.
Yeah. On Tuesday, he's going to get a delivery at his office of a kilo, and he's got two guys. Then bring four guys. Then bring four guys with guns, you know? So I did that like two or three times, and I was like, I'm out of that business.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't that just fucking, aren't you always looking over your shoulder then?
I'm a fucking comedian. I'm done.
Yeah.
And then, like, August of 93, I was like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? I have a daughter back in Boulder, you know, this comedy thing. I just came and looked behind. I looked into the mouth of the tiger. This requires a lot of work. It's going to be a lot. I could stay here and work really hard or go to Colorado, be closer to my daughter and work and do better work. Like, I don't have to do Brigham shows. Like, I knew people who book shows every week at bars and stuff like that. And it was crazy. I quit the job at the deli and like at the end of the summer. And I got a job selling Nissans and Lincolns or something like that. Mazdas.
God damn.
And Englewood Cliffs. It's a high-end area. And one day this girl came in with this guy, a fucking beautiful girl, Puerto Rican girl, just a 12. Body-wise was a 12. And this kid's just a little mook, you know. And as I sell him the car, they just graduated college. She's a drug counselor. He's like studying to be like a half a fag. I don't know what the fuck
he's studying to be.
she was beautiful, you know. And I called her 2 days later to see how the car was going. As a salesman, you always have to call and see how the car is doing. Is there anything else I could do for you? We got into a conversation. You know, and she goes, I want to come see you do stand up. And I sucked. And she came by herself. And I go, where's your boyfriend? And she goes, me and him broke up. After 3 years, we decided it was time. So I started dating her under the lie that I was clean and sober.
Oh, yeah. She's a drug counselor.
Yeah, she was a drug counselor. But the car she bought from me, she was buying because she wanted to drive to Colorado.
No way. All right.
She got a job offer in Denver. So I said, listen, are you still going to Denver? And she goes, yeah. I go, I'll make the ride with you. It was like perfect. It was like, yeah. She came in, bought the car, and a month later, we had to make a move. You know, she's like, I'm leaving like mid-October or something like that. And I'll never forget that I had no money put away. Like, I had nothing. My money went to an attorney, child support, and my drug habit. I think I paid George's mom like $50 a week to live there in the bedroom, you know, and that was it. Well, everything else went to my nose, an attorney bill, and child support. So I had to rob one more drug dealer.
Before you split?
Yeah, and that one was really scary.
Why?
You know.
What can you say about it? Like, when you're robbing them, are they there? Are you hitting their stash when they're not there? Are you taking it from them? Like, how's it going down?
They're there.
They're there.
They're there.
And do they know who you are, or are you covered?
No.
They don't know. Covered. Okay.
No, we're covered. I don't know them. I don't know what their patterns are. I don't know, you know. So that's the scary thing.
Yeah,
you don't know. So I needed money. I needed quick cash. And I remember we busted in there. It was the weirdest thing because this is how weird life is. I would work, if I didn't work at the deli, if I worked at the deli, I would meet this certain kid and he would take his car. He would rent like a car that resembled the cop car and he would park 3 or 4 blocks from their stash house. And he wanted them to see him.
Right.
Because in their mind, we wanted them to think we were cops. So when you come in and you're cops, what are you going to say? Just take everything. Go and arrest us. So we would go into guys as being cops, you know, like, you know. this one time, it wasn't good. The one guy was like, you're not a cop, blah, 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 blah.
Really? He called it out?
And I, yeah. And I was like, that's it. I'm not doing this again. We had to run a little bit. Like, I had to run like a block or two.
You ever get shot at or anything like that?
No. No. No, not this time. But then, like, that money took like 30% loan of what I owed. Like, I still wasn't right. I still didn't have enough money to move, you know. I was fucking broke. I was living hand to mouth. And he called me up again. And he goes, I got a new line and a guy. So this guy we followed. And we followed him for about 4 days. And do you know this was the easiest money I ever made? We were following him on the Henry Hudson Parkway, Expressway. We were like by 100th Street, 110th Street. And there's like a pull-off section. He just pulled off and ran away from the car.
Oh, because he thought you guys were cops following him? That is easy as shit.
We drove around
for an hour. I'd take the car, too. I'd take it all at that point.
We went back. We opened up the trunk. It was right there in the trunk. 4 pounds. We took it.
Damn.
And that's how I made the money. And then I put a bet in on Philadelphia was playing the Jets, I think, in Jersey. And Randall Cunningham got hurt. And I covered the bet. Like, the bet won. I won, like, another $8,000 or something. It was like a... Like, I already had money, and I put this huge bet in, and the deal was if I won, I would collect, and if I lose, I was going to Colorado anyway.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I ended up winning, so that gave me more money to take to Colorado. So I think I left for Colorado maybe like a week before Halloween.
Now, I've done that drive from Maryland, so... If you're doing coke and pills and all this, how are you hiding that on a cross-country trip with a drug counselor?
Well, with her, I just took a little bit of coke with me. And I had weed joints rolled, you know, with Banaka and, you know, the whole fucking Visine and stuff. I would smoke in the mornings while she was taking a shower in the hotel room. And go for a walk and air out and shit like that, you know? Ooh. And then we got to Denver. You know, I got to see my daughter. We got an apartment, like, in Aurora, a suburb of Denver. She started her job. I think I lasted 10 days in the house. And she caught me.
She did?
Yeah. And she goes, I had a feeling you smelled like marijuana 10 days ago. Why didn't you just tell me the truth and all this shit? I'm like, I don't know. You were just so fucking hot, you know. And she didn't go for it. She said she couldn't. That her job, she would lose her job, you know. So I ended up moving in with a cousin of mine who was fucking nuts, you know. He wasn't a blood cousin, but we had grown up together and I had seeked him out. He got me a job. I worked with him for like a month or two selling cars. And then the weirdest thing, a girl came into my life. Now I'm looking at my daughter. I'm seeing my daughter now, the whole thing. But this girl came into my life. Lori, her name was, really pretty. I knew her for years. I knew her husband. I knew everybody. All of a sudden, when I get back in that time, her and her husband broke up. And she had just gone off the rails. She was fucking doing blow every night, the whole fucking deal. So me and her got a hotel room and lived together for about a month. And we were just like cocaine partners. We slept together a few times, stuff like that. But we were more friends than anything. And one day, I bumped into her husband, who was a great guy. He put his hand out, and he goes, can I talk to you about something? I go, what's up? And he goes, listen, man, I really want to get back together with my wife. Would you mind, would you just give us, if you left her alone? He didn't threaten me or anything. This guy could probably beat me up, but he was a man, you know. He goes, you could do what you want. But if you could help me, I have a child with her. And if I could get her sober, the child could have a mother again, you know. So I remember I thought about it, and I'm like, this guy came up to me like a fucking man, you know. So I stopped seeing her. I just got my stuff and left. She was pissed. She called me a bunch of names. And I found a little apartment in Boulder right before the holidays. And yeah, I started 94 in Boulder.
So January.
And it was great. January 94. By that time, I'm rocking and rolling in comedy in Boulder.
You are. And what are you doing to pay bills and things? Are you still, do you still have a job? Or are you hustling? What are you doing?
I'm doing a couple different things. I'm fucking selling cars. I'm selling neon at the time. I was doing whatever I could.
What do you mean neon? Like those lights and shit that used to be on everything?
Yeah. Open signs and all that shit.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like that. And I was just doing comedy. Comedy was my life. Comedy was my fucking life, you know? So, hold on here. I gotta take a shit.
Yeah, can we keep this in?
Yeah, you can.
It was a whole different kind of sit down right here, you know, brother. It was a whole different, you know, kind of sit down.
When you have, you know, I'm tapering off the pain pills, so I got to eat these other pills that slice through your stomach. I drink 3 probiotic drinks a day, you know, but I take this pill. That's a pharmaceutical to really break things up in your asshole. And when you got to shit, you got to shit, Jack. There ain't no timeout. They ain't no nothing. A couple of weeks ago, I was doing a podcast, and I had a shit. And I had to come in here with the camera and everything, and just, like, nothing happened. There was an audio one for Patreon. Oh, and people were hearing. The people put comments. We heard you flush.
Dude, I've been there before. I've been there where I go to fart and then I'm like, no, talking to myself. Like, no, I don't have the outfit for this.
It's horrible. It's horrible to have to fucking do a podcast, not to take a shit or a piss in the middle of it. In the middle of this whole surgery, I had to take a little bottle with me into the podcast room.
Oh, I'm peeing.
And sometimes while I was doing the podcast, I'd have to take my little dick out and pee in the bottle because I have a stocking on. It's taking all the fluids out of my leg. So I got to pee every fucking 15 fucking minutes.
Oh, man.
Tremendous.
Tremendous is right, bro.
This is a real podcast.
This is a real podcast. This is how podcasting used to be. We'd all do it in our apartments and cars.
All these fags. Well, your studio, the lighting isn't right. Yeah, go fuck yourself. Don't you love those guys that complain about the lighting? The sound, you know, why don't you go, how's the sound when you suck a dick on the street? How's that sound? You fucking sack of shit. Anyway, sorry about that. It's a tremendous shit. It's coming out nice and smooth.
Good.
As you can see, there's no pressure.
No, I see.
There's
you look
no
good.
Faces.
Yeah, no redness. Anxiety you shit. Look good. Yeah.
Nah, nice and smooth. That's his medication. It's not even a stool softener. It's a missile shaper.
Yeah, I know those fucking those pills are cloggy all up. So this cleans you out, huh? And there's no... It's right when it's now. It's now, right now. Yeah,
it's now. There's no hold on. I gotta wait. I gotta do 2 things, and I got some Manscaped cologne right here. So I can sprinkle some on my ass right after this. You know what I'm saying? A little right there in the muffler. Nobody gets their feelings hurt. You know me. I don't like putting my toilet paper on a thing. I gotta do it fucking right here. And that's it. That's how we do it. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to sit here and call a timeout like some fruitcake.
Oh, my God.
Keep talking. I'm wiping.
I'm Everything ready. Good. So what are we, January 94 pretty much now?
Yeah, January 94.
Here's the beautiful thing. You're not even remotely close to the first person I've ever talked taking a shit, but definitely the first I've ever talked to while podcasting. Unless I didn't know. Unless they had a bucket under them or something.
Oh, my God. Thank God my hemorrhoid's gone. You know what I'm saying? I had this little hemorrhoid when I got here. And one day before the surgery, I went to float in the tank. You know, it's salty water. That fucking salt got that hemorrhoid.
I didn't even think about that.
I had to run out of that fucking thing and I had to bend over in the shower and spread my cheeks like a gay guy cool on Halloween.
Halloween.
Oh, my God.
All right. So January 94.
Hold on. I got to pee. Hold on. Turn the camera this way.
Turn now. You don't want to. Wait, you're going to stand up to pee now?
Yeah, I don't pee sitting down like a fucking fruitcake.
Hold on a minute. You're already sitting there. Why would you stand up to pee when you're already sitting there?
Because I don't like putting my dick in the toilet because I don't know who else put their dick in the toilet.
Wait, you just took a shit and you're standing up to pee now.
Yeah.
I want to know if anybody out there does that. You already did all the work. You're sitting there, man. You just piss it out now.
So what am I going to do? Put my dick in the toilet that's dirty. Other dicks have hit it.
Other dicks.
Now you do a little manscaping while you're here. Yeah,
clean it up a little bit. Unbelievable.
Throw some pubic hairs on you. And there you go. See what I'm saying?
That is unbelievable. Oh, man.
This is Manscaped's new cologne. Fucking refined.
Refined.
I'll spray some for the shit man in there. Take care.
Take care.
It. Who the fuck you think you're dealing with, Joey Bananas?
Oh, my God. Let's take a quick break and tell you about our first sponsor, Upstart. Now, you know that credit card that you're afraid to look at to see what the balance is? Well, if you've been avoiding your debt, it's time to confront it. Upstart can help you face it and finally pay it off. Listen to me. Upstart is the fast and easy way to get a personal loan to pay off your debt. It's all online, and whether you're paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple, fixed monthly payment. Upstart finds smarter rates with trusted partners because they assess more than just your credit score. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate up front for loans from $1,000 to $50,000. You can get approved the same day and receive funds as fast as one business day. If debt is taking over your life, it's time to get a fresh start with Upstart. So many of you have hit me up and told me that you've used Upstart and how easy it is and how glad you are that you did it. I'm telling you, it's the best thing to do. Consolidate it. Get yourself one monthly payment. All right. This is all you have to do. If you want to find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today, that's upstart.com/honeydew. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, your income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/honeydew. Our next sponsor is my bookie. Now, March is here. I'm a Pisces, big fan of March. Matter of fact, it's my birthday today if you're listening to this. And March Madness has officially begun. It's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. Select the winners from 63 tournament games in the MyBookie bracket contest for a chance at $10,000 in cash prizes. And it's only $1 to enter. That's right, $1. It doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, if you're betting the national championship winner, or if you're simply looking for player and game props. MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at MyBookie.ag and use promo code HONEYDEW to secure a deposit bonus up to $1,000. That's promo code Honeydew to claim your first deposit bonus. College ball, NBA, NHL, no matter the sport, no matter the minute, from tip-off to buzzer, MyBookie puts the action in your hands with in-game live betting. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Our next sponsor is Policy Genius. Now, if you're like me during the pandemic, I'm going back looking at all my bills, figuring out what I could pay cheaper on almost every single thing I'm paying on. So why not get a head start by revisiting your home and auto insurance with Policy Genius? First, head to policygenius.com and answer a few quick questions about yourself and your property. Then Policy Genius is going to take it from there. They're going to compare rates from over America's top insurance, from Progressive to Allstate, to find your lowest quotes. The Policy Genius team will look at all the ways to maximize your savings, including bundling your home and auto policies. If Policy Genius finds a better rate than what you're paying right now, they'll switch you over for free. That kind of service has earned Policy Genius a 5-star rating on thousands of reviews on Trustpilot and Google. All right, so while you're gearing up for spring cleaning, don't forget to dust off your home and auto insurance policies with Policy Genius. Reshop your rates, and you could save up to $1,055. Head to policygenius.com to get started right now. Policy Genius, when it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. Now, let's get back to the Duke. All right, get comfy.
Sorry about that.
No, no worries.
But when you gotta go, you gotta go.
Especially if you're on that medication.
Ooh, that was tremendous shit. You felt better. I had to be like 19 inches. Oh yeah, it looked like three It looked like three voodoo sticks sticking out of the fucking toilet. Fucking tremendous.
I've never heard that one in my life.
Me neither. I just made it up on the spot.
Oh god damn.
So right. January 94.
January 94, Colorado.
I go, I'm in Boulder. And
you're
I
doing
just
comedy.
Up. I'm doing comedy.
And where? Where back then? Sorry.
Back then there was a guy named Andy Payton who had he had 14 or 15 rooms. He was brilliant. I thank him for my comedy career. There's a lot of guys I gotta give thanks to. Rogan, Stanhope, but he's one of the earlier guys. We banged heads, but he liked me, and he did it right. He put together a comedy newspaper. All these comics, I'd always complain, nobody gives me a chance. I want to be a writer. Okay, here's your chance. You're a fucking writer. Write a column on comedy every week. You write a comedy on a comic. You write a comedy. An article about a comedy club. You write an article. You know, he did this really smart. And then he would make the places that did comedy buy advertising in his newspaper. And he would put the newspaper out once a week. It was great. It was really great. I mean, I did comedy after a fucking a line dancing class. Okay. You know, Monday nights was an Australian bar. That only sat 9 people. You know, Tuesday nights was a fucking an Italian restaurant.
Tuesday.
That the waiter was also an Elvis impersonator.
Okay.
So he would cook, bring out the food as a waiter, and then while you were eating, he'd come out as Elvis. And he was just 400 pounds and fucking, you know, just the beginnings of comedy, you know. And here you are getting on stage watching Joe Torre and everybody on, you know, HBO, mm-hmm. and you're like, I'm fucking doing comedy in an Italian restaurant for an Elvis impersonator. You know that part of comedy. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, it's the...
And even though you're doing it and you're writing and you're doing all the things you're supposed to be doing, it's not moving as fast as you'd like it to be moving, you know? But I was all in. I was out 7 nights a week.
Okay, so there was that kind of scene where you could actually do 7 nights a week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wednesdays was Club 56. They gave you a free steak. That's where I hit the kid in the head with the microphone and busted his fucking head. They had one of those portable microphones. Yeah. He kept flicking bottle caps at the comics. And I went up there and I go, the next time you flick a bottle cap, I'm going to fucking hit you in the head. And he walked up to the stage, so I just hit him with the microphone. And I forget the headliner's name. Years later, I saw the headliner. And he goes, you're not going to hit somebody with the microphone tonight, are you? I go, no. So Mondays was the Australian bar. Tuesdays was Comedy Works open mic. Or they had this Mexican bar that was an open mic. Wednesday was Club 56. Thursdays was El Torito. They gave you a $25. They gave you a $25 gift certificate. And then Thursday, there was something else on Thursdays. And then Friday and Saturday, you're an open micer. You deliver Chinese food.
You know? All right, so I stepped on you. Sorry. You said January 94, you just got done something, you were starting to say. You just got done doing something.
Nah, I just moved back from New Jersey. And okay. I was getting my feet on the ground. It took me about 3 months to get going, and now I was going.
All right.
Like, things were starting to happen. I was starting to get little calls for little comedy gigs, you know, $40, $30. I had about 20 minutes of material, you know. What happened in New York that really sparked me was one of the last times I went to your old Triple N, I walked in there at 2 a.m. and I saw John Leguizamo working out material for 8 people. But in his mind, he was at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
So for years, I was complaining that every time I got on stage, there was 8 people. He made it look like Madison Square Garden. So that's what made me say, fuck New York. I could get better in Colorado just as much as in New York. Save half the money and be close to my daughter.
Right. You know? And how old your daughter at this point? A couple years old?
Four. I came back. I celebrated her 4th birthday. That started problems with me and the ex-wife. And that's what was going on. I had an apartment. I had a good job. I was working for a sports betting service in the wintertime. And then on the off season, I was delivering Chinese food for Coke. And I was also selling neon for my buddy.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't selling Valium anymore because remember when I took the 10,000 Valium to New York?
Yeah.
I never paid that guy back. So
he had moved 10,000 and you were selling them at $3 a pop too, huh?
Something like that. He gave me like $1,000 on the arm or something. I told him I was coming back in a week. You know, I'll see you in a week. Okay. I didn't come back. When I came back, he had moved to a different part of Colorado. It was still close to me. So I always had the money if he needed it, but I never bumped into him. So fuck him. Welcome to the drug game, cocksucker.
Yeah, right.
So I wasn't selling Valium anymore. I still had a line on cocaine. But what I really wanted to do was do comedy. I had it down. I could do comedy from February to August 15th. Then August 15th to February 3rd, I was going to work for a sports betting service where I could make up to $100,000 in 6 months. And then the rest of the year, just do comedy.
And live off that $100. That's, okay.
That was the plan. Mm-hmm. That was the original plan that nobody knows about. I was very satisfied with that. I was a piece of
especially
shit.
Especially back then, $100,000 even back. I mean, now is a lot of money, but back then is a lot.
It wasn't even about the money. It was about, you know, being close to my daughter. It was, and just being a human being. That's it. What I was doing for a living was not decent. Selling sports picks is not a great job. It's a lot of fucking grinding. It's 7 days a week, you know.
Yeah.
In football season, it's Saturday and Sunday. College football's on Saturday and pro football's on Sunday. So, but I had a balance. I had this great balance. It was going to work. I would make $100,000. They put money away for you. Whatever you put away, they matched. And then they sent you a check those months you didn't work. And then, on top of that, I was going to fucking deliver Chinese food and sell Coke and do stand-up. I couldn't lose. And when I say sell Coke, I'm talking about I get a call from Sam Tripoli, he needs a gram. And I get a call from you that you need a gram.
Yeah.
I buy an 8-ball. I give you 2 a gram. I end up getting a gram and a half to $50. You know what I'm saying?
You're right.
That's what I mean selling Coke. I wasn't a Coke salesman. I mean,
yeah, you were a Valium salesman, but not a Coke salesman.
No. And I wasn't really a Valium salesman. It was what I sold whatever was.
Yeah, you were a salesman, you know, period. A salesman.
You got refrigerators? Yeah. Let's do it. You know what I'm saying? Whatever fell off the truck. Whatever fell off the truck. Yeah. That's what I sold. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want people to think I was at home. No. When I say Coke sales, I'm talking about for me to snort the Coke I was snorting, I couldn't afford it. So I would have to wait for you and Tom Segura to call me one night, you know, and say, yeah, we're going to get us 2 8-balls. Fine. I'm going to take a gram out of each 8-ball, you know, shit like that. That's what I did. I wasn't a Coke sales. But everything was going great. There was a great plan going on, but there was an undercurrent going on. And there was the undercurrent of the war between me and my wife, my ex-wife, and her boyfriend.
Oh, she's now a boyfriend by this, now. Okay.
Right. By this time, when I left, she already had the boyfriend. She had already moved in with him. She had already sent 2 guys to beat me up, and I beat up one of the guys.
Really? She sent people to fuck you up?
Yeah, 3 guys. A driver and 2 guys. The guy took off when he saw me in the car. And the other guy I hit, and the other guy I really threw a beat down on. And the other guy got away.
Where did they get you?
In front of my house. They broke my rib.
Damn.
With a fucking 2x4. They hit my dog with a 2x4.
They fucked your dog up? Oh, they
hit my dog one time.
No.
That dude still don't eat right. And it wasn't because he hit me. It was for the disrespect he showed the dog.
That's right. That's right.
He still doesn't eat right.
That's right.
I get 1,000 blessings every day from St. Lazarus because I made sure when I kicked him in the mouth, he's not going to eat right for the rest of his life. He's going to have to eat sideways. You know how I was taking a shit doing the show sideways?
Yeah, that's him.
When I heard my dog whelp that way, yeah. I heard my dog whelp. When you hear a dog whelp like that, everything in my body stopped. He had to die, but I didn't have the balls to kill him. So when he went down, I must have kicked him in the jaw 50 fucking times. And then I called the cop myself.
You did?
That I knew. Yeah.
Oh, you knew. Okay.
Because I was a convicted felon. I knew that this didn't look good, but this is also an attack on me.
Yeah, it's an assault. Yeah, of course.
It's an assault on me. But somehow, because I'm a felon, they're going to turn this around. So I called the cop I knew. I thought he was going to fucking call other cops. And fucking, he's like, let's put fucking cellophane in my trunk and we'll drop him off in front of the hospital. Fuck him. We put him in the trunk. We drove him to the hospital with the trunk open and everything.
No.
Yes, we did. He was a cop? Yep.
You threw a guy in the back of a trunk with a cop. This ain't the first dude you put in the trunk.
and he wasn't on duty.
You drove a fucking guy to the hospital with a cop in his trunk.
But he knew what was going on in my life. I had a couple cops that were my friends, and I told them what was going on in my life, and they knew what was happening. So when I fucking called him, he came over and he goes, fuck him. He deserved what he got, you know. When I told him that they, bro, when a cop comes in Colorado, when you tell somebody that somebody hit your dog, guns are gonna come out.
Yeah, right.
Like, he's lucky, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'll bet.
When he hit, my dog was still walking weird. I remember him looking at my dog and looking at the guy and kicking him again, just out of fucking principle. We took the fucking guy. He knew where the hospital had cameras because he was a cop. So we dropped him off on a corner where he couldn't be seen. We spit on him and we fucking got in his car and we left. So the next day, they attacked me on a Saturday night. And I was supposed to get my daughter on Sunday morning. They thought I was going to call them and cancel. I never called and canceled.
Okay.
They showed up and they were like pale when they showed up, and I didn't say nothing.
But did you know before that, or is that when you put two and two together?
Oh, I knew it was them.
You did.
I knew exactly who it was. Ain't nobody that fucking dumb, you know? Can nobody that be that stupid? He was that stupid. She didn't tell him the proper animal that I was. She didn't explain it to him. That's what really got me mad about the divorce, that she was there with me in the early 80s when I carried guns and did things that were not supposed to be done, that were very illegal. So for her to act this way really surprised me. I'm like, you know where I'm coming from. You know what could happen here. And you're still throwing fire on this. You're still throwing alcohol on this fire. So that before I went to New York, that was why I was so down, because they wanted me out of the kid's life. I hadn't done anything. But I'll never forget when they came to pick her up that Sunday. I put the kid in the car and I looked at them and I told them that somebody had attacked me. And they both turned pale. I pulled up my shirt and I showed them the purple. It was just purple. I couldn't even really move my arm. And they were like, oh my God, we hope you're okay. And I'm like, I'm fine. I got the guy's license. He's from Idaho. And the guy, John, a boyfriend, was from Idaho. Oh. I go, aren't you from Idaho, John? And that was the last word I said, because the first man who speaks after that loses. I just left it at that and I walked away from the car. And now they knew.
You knew.
It's on now. It's on. Now we're taking it to a different level. It's on. I wasn't wise about it. I wasn't 58. I would have handled it differently today.
How did you handle it?
By leaving.
Okay.
I left by leaving because it kept escalating. And I knew in my world, because that was January of 94. Okay. By December of 94, we were at such a war back and forth that she just called me out of the blue one day and said, I made up my mind. You're not getting it for Christmas. Now I was heartbroken. You know, I'm paying all my money to attorneys. I suck at comedy. I want it so bad. You know, I would go home at night and snort coke and cry. Most people go home at night, snort coke, and get their dicks up. I would go home, snort coke, and fucking cry like a pussy.
Oh, shit.
You know, and I was just in a bad place, you know, and I wanted to be a dad. I wanted to do comedy, and I wanted to fulfill my obligation. But I could tell that they weren't having it. So Christmas of 94, I get a call like the 22nd. Let's just call it the 22nd. So, and it was her attorney saying that she decided not to give me the baby. I called her like a man and said, you know, why are you doing this? And she gave me like a remark, like, because I can, and hung up on me. Ryan Sickler, I thought that was total disrespect. First of all,
it was.
She moved the guy. She moved the baby into the man's house without my consent or knowledge. If that was to happen anywhere from Baltimore to Boston, I could have shot her in the head, called the cops, and the cops wouldn't have arrested me. They would have said, we understand. You can't move a child into another man's house without permission. That's just general human decency. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can't see your wife moving your child into my house without us meeting.
No. Absolutely.
That should never happen.
And they've already sent fucking henchmen over to fuck you up on top of.
Yeah. So I had to go to war. I had to go to war with these people. So they called like on the 22nd. That night I went out. I did my comedy and I was heartbroken. And I fucking the 23rd or the 24th. One of those days is maybe like a Friday or a Thursday. I'd have to look it up. I was so broke then. I didn't even cook in this house. All I had in this house was fat tire beer. That's all I had. Fat tire beer. I always ate out. I didn't even have a knife. I think I had a fork and a spoon and maybe one knife, not a steak knife, just a regular butter knife. I went to a friend's house, a friend of mine. They're Cubans. And they were getting ready for Christmas and they're cutting shit. And I go, I need a big favor. I got to cut something at the house. Can I borrow your knife? And she goes, take whatever one you want. And I took the biggest one. They had like those racks, you know? Mm-hmm. I took the biggest one. I put it in like a bag and I put it in my car. And my job was, I was going to drive down to where he worked. And I was just going to cut him. I was just going to end his life.
Damn.
That's it. That's it. The day before Christmas, I'm going to jail for murder. I got in my car. I drove all the way down there. I got out of my car. I hid the knife in the jacket. And I put my arm under it real close. There was kind of a security guard at the thing. I went up to the receptionist. I said, where can I find John, blah, 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 from this company? She told me upstairs. They didn't ask me to sign nothing or nothing. There was a couple elevators I walked up. When I got to whatever floor, I went to his office. When I walked in, the receptionist was there. And she's like, can I help you? And I go, I need to speak to John such and such. And she goes, oh, my God, if you look in the hallway, you probably just missed him. He took an early lunch today. And I remember that I just didn't even reply to her. I just turned around and I got on the elevator and I went outside. I looked around to see if I saw him. And when I didn't see him, I walked to my car and I just broke down and started crying. Because God just saved my life.
He sure did. He saved two lives.
I was already prepared to go to prison. And at that time, the big thing was comics were writing jokes for Jay Leno. And if he bought a joke, you got $25 in the mail. That was my plan.
So wait.
To write jokes for Jay Leno.
If he's there, do you do it? Would you have done it? At the office and everything, the setting, the whole thing, you would have done it. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
How I felt that day, I was sick and tired of feeling that way. It had been... You know, 3 years I was feeling that way. You can't take that for so long. That you know, runs on you. That really wears on you. You know, when I was in New York, I would send her presents. She never got the boxes. She never got the letters. She never got anything I sent. You know, if I sent child support to the house, they mysteriously never got it. You know, it was just a string of fuck yous, you know. I had a fight to have her third birthday party at the house, you know, or the fourth one, whatever. So that, and then it was weird because I got in the car, I cried. I went home. And as soon as I got home, I got a text message from my attorney that she was going to give me the kid.
All right.
For Christmas. And, you know, again, I made such a big deal about getting the kid for Christmas. I was in no position to even throw Christmas. I didn't even know what to serve for Christmas. I didn't even have a Christmas tree. I had to go down to Kmart and rob a tree. Like one of the ones that are outside.
On the lot? Yeah.
Yeah. And in Boulder, they're nice people. They were open on Christmas Day. They had an envelope on the wall. And it said, take a tree. Leave the money in the envelope. I went in there and people had actually left cash. I took the cash.
Of course you did. And the tree.
And I took the fucking most expensive tree they had.
Got me.
I went home.
Got a Scottish pie here.
I fucking I remember I didn't even have scotch tape to put the decorations on the wall. I had to use duct tape to put the decorations on the wall. It was such a sad Christmas, you know? I'm like, what kind of dad am I? Yeah, well, every single gift she had was shoplift. There wasn't one gift that I gave her that year. She had a room full of gifts. I had shoplifted every one from Jeffrey. What's that?
Toys R Us.
Toys R Us.
Jeffrey, I love that you remember his name.
Those Jeffrey dollars.
Jeffrey, yeah.
Jeffrey. Fucking, you know, it, looking back, it was just a fucking embarrassment, you know. I ordered Chinese food. I had it from like 2 to 5 on Christmas Day, you know, like, what a fucking, just what a heartbreak, you know, when she left. Man, I'm driving a car that to close my car, I got to put a bungee on the door.
Oh, to, you know? Yeah, to hold the door shut.
And she pulls up in a Land Rover or something, you know, like one of those fucking cars, you know, with her soon-to-be husband. And it was just a shitty way to feel. It was, you know, when people hit me up and like, I'm having a bad day, I know exactly what you're like. That's what I went through for 3 fucking years with that, you know. And then January of 95 was when I started rocking and rolling with comedy. I started really, like, one night I went on stage to do 15, and the guy that was doing the show took a girl outside and got his dick sucked. So he never gave me a light.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up staying on stage for like 43 minutes or something, 34 minutes.
Yeah.
And when he got off, he's like, you did 34 minutes, so 43 minutes, one of those. And I'm like, that's it. I'm calling APA tomorrow. I'm ready for the big time. You know, like, I just loved comedy. I was in a groove. I was out every night. And I got her on Sundays and Wednesdays. And those were my toughest days when I had to drop her off. So I would put a joint in the ashtray. I would drop her off. And then on the walk to the car, I would cry. And I'd sit in the car and I'd cry and I'd smoke a joint and I'd force myself to go do comedy no matter how bad I felt.
That's right.
I think that part of how I got good at comedy was because of those Wednesdays and Sundays. I forced myself to go to the worst 2 comedy spots in the world. Sunday was line dancing. I had to follow a line dancing class. And Wednesday, I had a fucking, you know, it was just a bad time in my life. You know, it was like everything was shit except my comedy career, you know. And then like in March, her and I really started going at it. Like every time.
March 95, is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah. So now she says, fuck you. I'm going to start sending him to drop the kid off. To really. She was doing stuff to get under my nerves.
Sure, sure.
I'm trying my best. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to fucking be a gentleman. I'm going to take the high road. And one day he said something to me. He said, if I was you, I would think twice before you take her to see Jurassic Park or something like that. And I just spit right in his fucking face. Like, he was sitting in the car. And he like used like that, you know, what do they call that? White privilege.
Yeah. Yes. White like, privilege.
I don't mind how you talk to me. Just don't white privilege me.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to work out for you. He white privileged me. And I mean, I didn't say a word. I just had like a snot in the back of my throat. I could feel it, but I had to spit. And it was like automatic. I just spit right in his face. Because that's the point of my life it was at. Like, we're going at it. We're done talking. There's no reason for you to make small talk with me. You don't like me. You're trying to cut my legs out from under me. Now you're telling me about a movie? Don't talk to me. I just spit in his fucking face. And I still remember him looking at me for like 3 minutes and the spit rolling down his face. He didn't even have the heart to wipe it off. The fucking mutt that he was, you know. I'm not mad at him no more. It was a different time. it was a different place. And then she took me to court because he was scared. He claimed that he was scared to come.
After they send people out to fuck you up, he's scared.
So I had to hire a girl to meet her to get the kid. It was a fucking nightmare. And then one day she decided, don't worry about it, I'll meet you. Because it wasn't working for her. She wasn't instigating me no more.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect. Now I wasn't seeing her at all. She didn't want that. She wanted to get me going.
Yeah.
She wanted to round me up. So it's about April of 95. I fucking go to the Comedy Works one night. And I'm in the Comedy Works now. I'm not a regular, but she's giving me star spots during the week. And there was a manager there that didn't like me. On paper, he liked me, but deep down inside, he didn't like me. Because at one time, we were neck and neck. And then I just got way funnier than he was. So he got into the management business instead. And he told Wendy that I had smacked the girl's ass. I was supposed to open up for George Lopez that week. And yeah, Wendy called me and said, yeah. And Wendy, you know, I love Wendy to death. Yeah. She called me up and she's like, Joey, you're banned. I got a ban, you know. And I'm like, listen, if you called me and told me I robbed you or fucking, you know, smacked somebody or I said something wrong on stage, I would accept it. But I didn't grab no woman's ass. First of all, if I'm going to grab something, I'm going to grab the money. I'm going to grab that monkey. If I do grab something, I'm not going to grab some skinny chick's ass. What do I get out of that? So, you know, it was like everything, like nobody, everything, nothing wanted me there in Denver anymore. Like now I couldn't do comedy now. Like I was doing so good comedy wise. Now I couldn't even do comedy anymore. And then one, now I'm picking her up from daycare now on Wednesday. We got it this good now. Wednesdays, I could pick her up at Montessori and then take her till 7. And this one day, I pick her up at Montessori. And as we're going up the stairs, she goes, you know, she would always ask me questions. Daddy, what does this mean? Or what does this word mean? We were walking up the stairs and she asked me what the word spick meant. And I go, why? Where'd you hear that? And she goes, whenever you call the house, John says that the spick is on the phone.
Oh, shit. And what and was right your what there, was your ex-wife's nationality, by the way?
She's a white chick.
She's a white girl. Okay.
Good people. Good yeah. people. Good family.
I love how people That's have to why. Clarify white people. Like they're good people. we good we people. Cause so much trouble. Okay, so he says that, and your daughter's asking you what that means.
So now, let me tell you something. About a month before this day, I had a good friend named Fred. He was a Vietnam vet. We had met in 1985, the summer of 85 in Boulder. Now it's 95, and we're dear friends. For some reason, for years, I thought Ed was a medic in Vietnam. Ed was a lerp. Ed was one of those guys that cut your ear off and collected it and shit in Vietnam. So I would see Ed at night. Ed would come to watch me do comedy in Boulder and places, you know, like I think there was a poetry shop that we did comedy at. And I would meet Ed and give him a couple bucks and smoke a joint with him. So Ed knew what I was going through, my pain. So Ed's like, let's just fucking kill him. You know, Ed's like, I don't know why you're going through this. I go, yeah, but do we shoot him? Do we bury him? He goes, no, we don't. We take him to Chautauqua Park, to the top, and we rub him down with maple syrup, and we'll let the bears eat him. They eat everything. They'll eat his elbows. They'll eat everything.
You're going to cover him in syrup and just tie him up so he can't run, and then the bears are going to eat him. Jesus
Christ. Put a gag in his mouth.
Oh, my God.
Break his jaw so he can't talk. Oh, my God. And let the bears eat him. I mean, that's how crazy I was.
Oh, my God.
That's how crazy I was.
Yeah.
This is why when I tell people I'm 58 and you have no idea how lucky that you are. That,
I've known you for a long time. I've never heard of any syrup on a motherfucker.
I'm telling you, we were going to put syrup on this motherfucker and let the bears and the tigers eat him.
The tigers.
That was the plan. And then like that, there'd be no fingerprints. There'd be no DNA. There'd be no bullets. There'd be no hole in the ground. There'd be nothing. It would be. So what we were going to do is there was a drop. We were going to close that fucking street. Like, Ed was that crazy. Ed was going to get cones to detour him, and then we were going to jump him and fucking fuck him up. That was the plan all along. We were going to fucking kill this motherfucker.
And if she was
with him, she was going down too. Like, this was how bad my mind had taken this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about on my podcast the other day how when your mind takes something sometimes, it just takes it. That's why there's mental health issues. I was having really bad mental health issues, you know, stem from anger and frustration.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, your whole background.
So I'm getting ready to kill this motherfucker. And now I pick up my daughter and she's telling me he's calling me a spick. He's got to die today. Like, I'm like, he's going to die today. I don't even have time to call Fred. I didn't even have a cell phone. I had a pager. You know, there was no cell phones in 94.
Right.
If they were, I didn't have one. I didn't have that type of money.
No.
So me and her did what we usually did. We went to a park, you know. We went to North Boulder Park. I never forget that. And the reason why I remember North Boulder Park, because there's a little, not a grave site, but like a memorial. And I remember that day, it was Joe Welsh's daughter. Joe Welsh, the guitar player from the Eagles,
yep,
lived in Boulder, and his daughter died, but he lived in Boulder.
Oh.
And he made a special little thing for her. I'll never forget this day, for some reason, how it went down. And I remember thinking, like, wow, this is crazy that, you know, just somebody's going to end up in a fucking grave here over an argument about a kid, you know, about a child, that somebody's going to die over this. Either I'm going to go to jail for life or he's going to die. And I'm, you know, this is not good. And I remember getting in the car at like 6:30 and I had to meet her at Safeway. On this particular day, they switched the meat from Boulder to Safeway. It was outwards a little more. And I'll never forget that when I was out on bail for kidnapping, they made me do community service. And I did it at the AIDS place. And in 85, AIDS was not a popular thing.
Yeah.
There was always a cop on duty there, you know, protecting the AIDS guys because they would get bomb threats and shit. So I became friends with the cop at the AIDS place. I would always talk to him. I would paint walls. And I was telling him what I was going through also with my wife. So all this is in play. I'm driving to the thing and I'm like, Jackie, are you sure that he said the word spick, that you didn't hear this somewhere else? And she's like, no, Daddy, I heard it from him. I thought it was like a funny word or something. And I'll never forget pulling up at Safeway. I go, Jackie, wait here. Let me go talk to John. I got out of the car and I walked up to John. I go, John, listen, I don't want any problems. I got a 5-year-old girl in the car and she says that you used the word spick. Is it true? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like Thurston Howell the Third.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, dog, listen, spick is an East Coast word. This is Boulder, Colorado. Nobody uses this fucking word. Just man up and tell me you did it and we'll move on. And he goes, I feel threatened. I'm going to call the police. I go, why would you feel threatened if you didn't say it? Did you say it? He goes, I'm going to call the police. I go, before you call the police, I got something for you. And I just smacked him open-handed with everything I had. Fucking 5 years.
While he's sitting in the car?
No, he's standing out. He's up. Out. Okay. He's outside. He went shopping for something. Okay. I caught him as he was bringing the groceries back. So he was putting them in the car. And he's like, where's Jack? Where's Jack? And I'm like, before that, I got to talk to you. And he goes, I'm going to go inside and call the police. I feel uncomfortable. It was 5 years of aggravation. I smacked him with an open hand to make it even worse for him. That's the biggest insult in my world. Not a punch to the face.
Yeah, slap you like
a man
bitch.
Smacking him. I just slapped him open-handed, and I slapped him so hard that he lost his footing. He's like, that's it. I'm calling the police. And I go, before you call the cops, I got one more for you. And I got him. So I got him with a double whammy, right? I'll never forget, some lady was up the corner, and she yells, I'm calling the police. I'm like, go fuck yourself, you fucking cunt. This was like 5 years, 4 years of torture that these two idiots had put on me. 3.5 years. So sure enough, the cops come. But because there's a God up in the sky, guess who was the passenger cop?
The Your cop buddy that from Safeway.
Was
no way.
From the AIDS place.
Thing. No way.
So he came to me. The other cop came to me. I told him my story first. He knew the story with John. They put us together. Then they separated us. Then they decided to give me a ticket for both of us to appear as a summons. They didn't charge me with anything. Okay? We both go to court. And at court, I walk into court, and who is it? It's the judge that sentenced me.
Nah.
Now he's a civil judge. So they turned this into like a house thing, like a domestic situation type thing. So I go in. I had always written the judge letters. I'm a letter writer. I wrote the judge a letter when he sentenced me, thanking him for putting me in jail. And I wrote him letters every month. Thank you. I'm the number one convict in this facility. I eat all my corn, you know, whatever.
I eat all my corn.
I got into stand-up comedy. I got my GED. You know, I would write him letters every month. So he knew what was going on. He was prepared already.
That's interesting.
So when he walked in, him and my wife.
So he had a legit backstory. He knew your backstory. That's something a judge never does, because you're just a stranger to a judge.
Who the fuck you think you're dealing with?
Yeah.
Joey Bananas, baby. So the judge, they're in court yelling. They even bring, they're so
good. Who's they? Who's yelling?
My ex-wife, her boyfriend. They're so desperate, they bring the arresting officer on the kidnapping case in to talk on their behalf, how I'm bad for the community and shit. They didn't know I was talking to this judge the whole time. Me and this judge have been tight. Plus, I go to his brother. He's my dentist. You know what I'm saying? Like, who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? You know me, dog. I'm a professional. When I go, I go. I work it from every fucking angle. That's all.
Sure as fuck do.
The mafia is working it from every angle. So we're in court, and the judge rips up the summons. And he goes, there's only one problem here. There's a Boulder County law. You can't use a racial slur in the city limits.
Is that right?
I smacked him one block into the city limits. So the court got thrown out of, it got thrown out of court. And then her and him and the cop started yelling at the judge to reprimand me and all this shit. And the judge, I'm like, I'm not having it. The judge looked at my wife. And he goes, weren't you in here a couple of years ago singing his praises? Now you want to come in here and tell me he's a bad guy? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. The next time you miss a visitation, I'm going to fine you $1,000 and throw you in jail for contempt of court. So she starts crying. Her boyfriend starts crying.
He's crying.
The cop is yelling. And now Joey Diaz goes to work. There was a long walk out of that fucking courtroom. It was like a 100-yard walk to the car. I didn't stop saying shit to the car. I kept walking saying, tell your husband how I used to put up your ass with carrots. Tell him how I used to, I call her Kathy Carrots and all this shit. I never put a carrot in her ass, but I had a fucking, you know, yeah. It got so bad, he walked away from her. Like, I was saying so many things to her, like a pussy smells like feet.
Feet.
That he walked away from her. That's how embarrassing it got. He was so embarrassed. I got in my car. I didn't feel too good about what happened. But here's the clinker. But after I smacked John and the cops came, I remember looking at the car and seeing my daughter, and she was crying. She was upset. I saw my dad, my stepdad, beat up a guy when I was 6, and I was jumping up and down. That was my, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that was my world.
Totally. Yes, right.
That was my world. This little girl, this isn't her world.
No.
So all these factors contributed. I go, they're trying to put a family together. I'm just here wasting time. Even if I get co-parenting, whatever that's called, whatever.
It's co-parenting's right. Split custody.
Split custody.
Shared custody, whatever.
Let's be honest.
That's what I have.
What type of father would I be? At the age of, by this time it's 95, I'm 32 years old. I'm like, let's say I do get split custody. What's going to change? I'm still going to do coke. There's no woman in this house. The only women that come here to suck my dick, they're terrible women. They just do blow, my blow, and do coke. You know, there's no food. I don't cook. I have no foundation. I don't go to church. I have nothing that requires me. Now I don't even have a comedy club. I met a girl in Seattle. I met a girl in Michigan. She said she was moving to Seattle. I prayed on it for about a month, and I thought about it. This was going to end. This thing in Boulder was going to end. There was 3 ways this was going to end. Me being dead, me going to jail, him dying, or both of them dying, and then my daughter has to be raised without a parent.
Right.
I put it in the Lord's hands, and I said, you know what? I'm going to do an extended triple run. I took a 2-month triple run. I paid my rent off for
triple
September.
Runs, yeah. You did what, all the Pacific Northwest and shit?
Yeah, the potato one, to run one, potato run two, the whole thing. And I said, I'm going to put it in God's hands, and I'm going to be a comedian, and I'm going to make her proud of me. I'm going to prove whatever they told her wrong of me, and then I'll be her father. Well, 30 years later, I proved her wrong, but I still don't have her. But God drew me the 18. God threw me another little girl that fills the void. Now I have a real family. I act like a real man. I'm not a savage anymore. And that's it for today. So now we're in June of 95.
I'm writing it down. June 95. All right, Joey Diaz. I fucking love you. What an episode. Again, what an episode. One more time, promote everything. The Patreon, all that stuff again, please.
Patreon and Uncle Vinny's in Point Pleasant the whole month of March on Wednesday nights.
All right, bro.
37 tickets. You're in no danger of getting COVID. He spaces it out, BYOB. It's a great club. I love Dino. And that's the only place I'm performing at right now in Jersey.
That's awesome, brother. Well, thank you for making time for this. And
thank you
nice
for having
to talk
me, brother.
To you, brother. I love you. I miss you.
Oh, I miss you. I miss you like hell.
We'll pick up whenever we do next time, June of 1995. As always, Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.